Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Bill Buckmaster Show, Tucson's most trusted voice for news and information. This is Ben Bueller Garcia, normally the host of American Warrior Radio, heard Saturdays at noon here on KVOI, sitting in for the vacationing Bill in the Green Thing Socolo Village Studios. If you'd like to interact with us, give us a call on the live line, the Buckmaster Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That number is 790-2040. In the second half of today's show, we'll be discussing what one organization is doing to assure that the remains of those who served our nation do not lay forgotten on a shelf in a funeral home today. We've got a great group coming on that's giving those folks the proper burial that they deserve, which leads to Ben's annual public service announcement. Veterans Day is for thanking those who served our nation in uniform. Memorial Day is to honor the memory of those who died protecting our freedoms. Please, please, don't wish a veteran a happy Memorial Day. It's not happy for many of the families out there, and certainly it's not the right day to thank them for our service. If you want to do something, find the name of someone online or go to a cemetery and just sacrifice a minute out of your weekend for someone who sacrificed the rest of their lives so that all the rest of us could live free. If you've been watching the news or if you tuned in on Tuesday, you know that the Biden administration just announced a series of increased tariffs on Chinese goods and materials. Among the items affected are batteries for electric vehicles and other items that depend on lithium-ion batteries like your cell phone or your laptop computer. One of the things that the pandemic really exposed is our nation's over-reliance on the importation of things that are very critical to our manufacturing sector. A new project is being developed just south of Patagonia that will address two of those gaps, manganese and zinc. Joining us today to tell us more about that is the president of South 32 Hermosa Critical Minerals Project, Pat Reisner. Pat has 30 years' experience working on complex mining projects in both the U.S. and Australia. Pat, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show.
Thank you, Ben. Great to be here with you today to talk about Hermosa.
So what is the current status of the project?
So our board of directors at South 32 made a decision in February to move the zinc part of the project. So it's a two critical minerals projects, the only mine development in the U.S. that would produce two federally designated critical minerals off the federal government's critical minerals list, zinc and manganese. In February, our organization made the decision to move the development of the zinc deposit into full construction. So that is a commitment of $2.16 billion over the next 3 years. So if you sort of draw a line south of Phoenix, it's the largest investment. It will be the largest private investment in the history of Southern Arizona. So that part of the project has moved into construction. We have a private land base down in Santa Cruz County in the Patagonia Mountains where we have the permits we need to start the construction and start to begin developing that mine. It's about a three-year construction program. First zinc production would be in early 2027. We're in a pre-feasibility study on the manganese deposit, which is very unique. It's the only advanced manganese deposit in the U.S. that could produce an electric vehicle battery-grade manganese. But we are doing some early construction to gain access to that ore body underground as well. And so we do have a federal permitting process that's just kicked off with the U.S. Forest Service. But I think what's important is these two deposits, critical minerals deposits, are focused on private land. So we are able to develop the project, get it into full production for a number of years on state permitting with the state of Arizona. And we're proceeding with that with the zinc deposit.
Now, I'm more familiar with copper. How do you actually process zinc and manganese? Or, I mean, what will be coming out of the site there? Will it be something loaded in trucks, I assume, or...
Yeah, so the zinc's used to galvanize steel. So anything you see in the outside world made of steel is coated in zinc to keep it from rusting. So buildings, bridges, and a number of things that are really driving up demand is wind turbines and things like that, renewable infrastructure, transmission infrastructure. So we will mine the zinc deposit on site. We will have a very traditional base metals processing plant on site. A lot like what's used in the copper industry. It's a very similar approach, very similar technology to produce a zinc concentrate that then goes to a smelter where it gets smelted into a finished metal product that's used ultimately. The manganese is a little bit different because we're making an electric vehicle battery grade product. So there's manganese in the cathode of every lithium ion battery, about 17% in a typical lithium ion battery in an electric vehicle. We will build a separate processing facility for the manganese, that will produce the battery grade product. And it's quite different to your normal mineral processing type facility to produce that product.
And obviously the smelting is not going to be done on site. I mean, that goes somewhere else.
Correct. One of the challenges we have in the U.S., and this is the same in the copper industry, is even if we can mine it here, we don't have the smelting infrastructure in the U.S. Over the years, most of the smelters have closed. A lot of barriers and challenges to developing new smelting capacity, refining capacity in the U.S. So unfortunately, that's become concentrated in China and Asia. But because zinc is a critical mineral, we want to keep the finished product serving the U.S. domestic market. That's really important to us. So we're working with zinc smelters that are in Mexico and British Columbia up in Canada that still serve the U.S. market with their zinc product so that we can keep that critical mineral product on the North American continent and serving the U.S. market to the fullest extent possible.
Pat, you and I were kind of chatting and chuckling off the air about so many of the misconceptions that people have about mining, particularly if they're not from this part of the country. And this South 32 Hermosa is going to be an underground mine. It's not an open pit mine, correct?
Right. And there's a number of things we're trying to do differently. I think our industry has a challenge in that people's mindset around what we do is very much stuck in the past, and next generation modern mining looks very, very different. So maybe three things I can touch on to demonstrate that. You talked about underground mining. So we won't have any open pits. We won't have, as large a waste dumps and things like that as you typically see in an open pit environment. So people are often concerned about the vast areas of land that get disturbed in a mining operation. An older open pit copper mine might disturb 10, 20,000 acres. So what we're doing with the underground mining method, we're going to use, and we'll be backfilling the areas underground we mine with the tailings that come out of the processing plant. So that then you don't have to store the tailings on the surface and you don't get any subsidence from the underground mining. So what that means is we'll mine both the zinc and the manganese deposit for about 750 acres of disturbance compared to thousands or tens of thousands historically. So that's a really important factor in terms of protecting biological resources, cultural resources. We will use 75% less water than a normal mining operation, which, in Arizona, that's
important.
Really important. It's a precious resource everywhere, but particularly in the Sonoran Desert and in Arizona. And we're also aiming to use all battery electric equipment fleets underground and on the surface, and working with TEP and Unisource Energy on supplying the mine with renewable energy. And we hope with all of that, we can get to a net zero greenhouse gas emissions mine as well.
Will you be net zero on your water once you're in full production too, with recycling and the dry stack and some of that stuff?
So we're looking at that, looking at a number of measures like that we can achieve. I mean, initially, it'll be about 75% less than what a normal mine would use. And we achieved that we built the first new dry stack tailings facility in the U.S. to clean up some historic waste that was left behind from 18th, 19th century mining. But also our underground mining method, we're able to reduce water use intensity quite a bit. But we do, our company has a goal of no net loss for biodiversity. Mm-hmm. To achieve that, we're going to look at how we implement that at Hermosa. And that is why our small footprint, small surface disturbance is important. But that will also involve looking at water, and so ways in which we can offset our impacts.
I mentioned I grew up, part of my life growing up was in Superior, and the magma mine was in operation then, and now they're looking at Resolution, if I'm not mistaken. And even back then, we're talking mid-70s, there was some of the engineers that went to our church and they said, we know there is just an amazing copper deposit there. We just can't get to it. Mm-hmm. Well, now with robotic mining, they can. And are you going to be using some of that as well?
Well, that's interesting. That's similar to the history of our site. So
the
site we're on was mined as far back as the 1850s and 60s, but more recently, between the 1930s and 1960s, there was some shallow mining of lead-silver veins about 400 or 500 feet deep. That was the source of the historic waste that we cleaned up in collaboration with the state of Arizona as part of a voluntary cleanup program. But what they didn't know at the time is probably one of the largest undeveloped zinc resources in the world was beneath them. But at the time, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, they didn't have exploration techniques really to be able to determine that it was there. And so we're coming back into an area that has been mined extensively historically, but a much more significant resource that exists, you know, further at depth. So we'll be between 1,200 and 4,200 feet deep. But the other thing we do have as a next generation mining operation is we will have extensive automation and remote operations. So we announced about a month ago that we're going to build what we call Centro, which is our remote operating center. We're going to build it in Nogales, so about 30 miles from the site. And from that facility, we will have people operating equipment remotely that will be 4,000 feet underground, 30 miles away, or monitoring automated equipment in the production process that's running on its own without an operator, and it's just monitored from that facility. So it's incredibly cutting-edge technology, and we're really proud to bring that facility to Nogales, a part of the state that really needs jobs, and it'll be a wonderful thing for the community and a showcase of what next-generation mining and new technology brings.
Well, and that also reduces your ecological impact footprint. You're not have to drive those employees aren't driving to the job site. That's really cool stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster here on the Buckmaster Show. If you'd like to give us a call, 790-2040. We're talking with Pat Reisner. He's the president of the South 32 Hermosa Critical Mineral Project. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery. They're on the northwest corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's has been producing delicious pastries for over 20 years. Why not be the office hero and swing by Mona's on your way to work tomorrow and pick up some treats for your fellow employees? Mona's is open for breakfast and lunch from 6:30 to 2 p.m. Check out their offerings at monasdanishbakery.com, or you can also find their link at buckmastershow.com. We're talking with Pat Reisner. Pat is the president of the South 32 Hermosa Critical Minerals Project. You like the way I rolled my R there, Pat?
Much better than I'm able to do. Thank you.
Well, you know, you're from Oklahoma. I mean, what can we say? We're talking about just the technology. Explain dry stack to people, because I think a lot of folks may not get that and why it's so important to this project.
Right. It's something that the industry's been talking about shifting to for a while now, and we had the opportunity to work with the state of Arizona to actually build a facility and clean up some historic waste from last century that was causing some pollution to show people what it looks like. What it really is typically in a mining operation, when we process the ore into a copper concentrate or zinc concentrate or whatever, you get the rock that gets separated from the metal, and you have rock waste that's left over. And typically, what happens is that goes, it gets mixed with water, and it gets pumped in a pipeline out to a tailing storage facility. And the water and the tailings go out together into that facility, and the water just settles and it, you know, stays there forever. So your typical tailings facility you see around Arizona would be probably 60-70% moisture if you look at what's contained there. What we're going to do, a dry stack facility, is you have a piece of equipment on the back end of the plant that just presses, it just squeezes the water out of the rock that's coming out. You're able to recycle that water then, run it back through the process. And so that's part of why we're able to achieve a 75% reduction in fresh water use. But then, so the tailings that go out into the facility, you end up with less than 12% moisture as opposed to 60-70% moisture. So that's all water savings. The other thing we do in our facility is we compact the tailings just like you compact the base of a road before you lay down asphalt. And so that reduces the footprint or the area you need even further and makes it safer and more stable. We also have one of the only, if not the only, lined tailings facilities. So we have barite clay liner and a liner underneath it, as well as an underdrain collection system that collects any water that hits it. So it's safer, it's more stable, it results in less water use, and at the end of the day, takes up less surface space.
So in my mind's eye, when you're talking about that, I'm picturing a French press coffee maker.
Exactly.
Kind of the same, basically.
Except standing up on its side, yep, and it presses the water out of the tailings just like that. Yep.
Huge economic impact for Southern Arizona, Pat, but especially you'd talked about in the last segment, in Santa Cruz County, where, you know, the jobs are just going to be so important. Man, Nogales in particular had been hit so hard with the lack of trade and the crossings now that's taking place there. Last time I was down there, it just completely broke my heart. Talk about, so at full operation, how many employees?
So we'll have about 900 direct South 32 employees. That will generate another 1,500 indirect jobs in the county, but 900 South 32 employees. You know, the per capita income in Santa Cruz County is 40% below the Arizona state average. The unemployment's about double, almost 25% live below the poverty line. And every one of those 900 jobs generates income equal to about double the current household income in the county. So it's a game changer socially and economically. We'll double the property tax revenue in Santa Cruz County. 60% of that goes to schools. So the per pupil funding increases. We know what education does to address poverty and poverty levels. So it's probably the thing we're most proud of, and why, you know, what really many of us get out of bed every morning to do this is the wonderful impact we expect it can have on that community and opportunities for young people.
And when do you expect that, assuming, which in mining in United States is maybe a big assumption, but assuming everything stays on the proper timeline with your approvals, when do you see the real ramp up for employment? When should people be going to the South 32 website and saying, hey, where do I apply? Or better yet, for the families out there hearing this broadcast, what kind of training should they be talking to their children about to be prepared for these really high-tech jobs?
Right. So we've formed a workforce development task force in Santa Cruz County with vocational educators, the superintendents from all the schools, and they're basically working the rest of this calendar year to design our local workforce development programs. We will start training people in Santa Cruz County in 2025, early next year. So 2025, 2026 will be the training period. The great thing about the use of automation and technology is we can train people that have no mining experience in less than 12 months to do those jobs, as opposed to historically, if you're going to run a piece of equipment underground and sit on it and operate it, you need underground experience. That enables us to have a much more local workforce and to actually train people in Santa Cruz County to do these roles. And as a result of that, we've made a commitment that at least 80% of our long-term operational workforce will be residents of Santa Cruz County today. And it's achievable largely because of the use of technology, our ability to execute these workforce training programs over the next 2 years, and because Centro sits in the community in Nogales, mm-hmm. And the opportunities that presents for people that live nearby.
Based on the exploratory drilling you've done so far, what would you forecast the lifespan, the operational lifespan of these projects?
So we've pegged it initially at least up to 30 years on the zinc deposit and up to 70 years on the manganese deposit. That being said, we have drill rigs running every day, continuing to drill on the perimeter of both the zinc deposit and the manganese deposit, and we are continuing to find more. So we haven't found the extents of it. It's growing every day. And so we do expect those mine lives to extend and go further. And so this is a multi-generational, multi-decade opportunity for the community.
So literally, if I'm a junior in high school, I get myself trained now, or even a senior in high school, I get myself trained now, I could have my entire career and retire out of South 32.
Absolutely.
That's not a bad gig.
We talk a lot about, there's a lot of middle school children in Rio Rico and Nogales now that we expect to be with us for a long time. And so we have started about 5 years ago supporting robotics programs actually in the elementaries in Santa Cruz County, a program called Tecnolo Chicas, which is a STEM program for Latina girls in the middle schools in Santa Cruz County. And that, because that's our workforce, mm-hmm. and they're the ones that will be with us for decades. And having Centro, the remote operating center in the community, will allow us to bring people into the workforce that never would have had access to jobs in the mining industry. So we expect to have a more diverse workforce and one that reflects our host community. It looks like our host community in terms of demographics, gender diversity, and everything else.
Given the history of that mining district, can we expect to see some silver coming out of these holes too?
Yeah, so the zinc deposit, while it'll be primarily zinc, will produce byproducts of silver and lead.
Okay.
The manganese deposit will produce byproducts of zinc and silver. So everything we will produce goes towards decarbonization. The manganese is for electric vehicle batteries. The zinc supports renewable development. The silver all goes into solar panels. A lot of people don't realize that every solar panel is coated in silver, and so the majority of the silver also goes in, and then lead's obviously in your batteries.
I'd shared that to me a big part of this is the national security aspect of things. You just got a pretty big grant from the Department of Defense, a $20 million grant. That's got to help too.
It does, and that's a really important point. You started the conversation about supply chains. 96% of the battery grade manganese in the world comes from China, and so 2 years ago, President Biden invoked the Defense Production Act, which is an executive action where the president can stimulate the domestic production of things that are of national security importance. And he did it for the five battery metals that go into lithium-ion batteries, manganese being one of those. And it's just recognition of, if we're going to put 8 or 9 million new electric vehicles on the road by 2030, and all the manganese that goes into those batteries comes from China, that's a national security risk.
No question.
And so the Department of Defense had some funding to support battery metals projects to create domestic supply chains to address that issue, and that's where that funding came from. So it really recognizes the strategic importance of the resource for our country.
Outstanding. Now, you're in the middle of a scoping process right now. Folks can share their comments with the Forest Service. The deadline for that is coming up June 10th. And folks, if you want to learn more about this, you heard just how this is a, I really, personal opinion, this is a win-win for everybody. It precious, you know, critical minerals, jobs, and a place that needs it right now. And frankly, my dream is that Southern Arizona becomes the Silicon Valley of mining technology, and projects like yours just really, really get us on the way. Folks, you can learn more at South32Hermosa, HERMOSA.com. Pat, anything else you want to share with our listeners today?
No, we're just really pleased to be a part of the Southern Arizona community. I think it's a blessing to be sitting here next to a world-class university that has a mining school as well. And so this community has had a lot of talent flight and young people over the years that leave to go to school and don't have professional roles to come back to. And we're going to change that and keep those that talent and those people in Santa Cruz County. And our team's really proud of that, and we're proud to be a part of the region.
And, you know, I don't want to overlook also, you know, you talk about the high tech, the drone operators, if you will, I don't know, guys, but you also need welders, you need mechanics, I assume security. So lots of opportunities there at South 32. And can they find that at your website on a regular basis to see what's coming up?
On the website, yes, it'll point people to career opportunities. And as those training programs unfold next year, we'll have a much bigger effort to communicate how people can access those opportunities.
Outstanding. Well, Pat Reisner, thanks for spending some time with us today. I'm not going to wish you luck because I know luck's got nothing to do with it, but keep up the good work. And we're behind you here.
Thank you. We appreciate the opportunity to share our story today.
Stick around, folks. Coming up, we'll introduce you to the Missing in America Project. We'll be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in here in the Green Thing Socolo Village Studios. Listen, if you're like me and you're an optimist and you're already planning for your fall gardens, check out the experts at Green Things. That's what Laura and I do. They've got 13 acres of everything you need and friendliest staff with the best advice in town. They're on River Road just west of Brandy Fenton Park. While you're there, check out the beautiful imported furniture and art at Socolo Village. You can find them on the web at greenthings.com or socolovillage.com. Socolo is spelled Z-O-C-A-L-O. Don't forget, you can give us a call. The Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management Buckmaster Live Line. That number is 790-2040. It's long been a tradition of our military that we never leave a man or woman behind on the field of battle. As a nation, we go to great lengths to assure that the remains of the fallen are returned to their families and accorded a dignified burial. But what about those left behind in our own country? There are countless remains of veterans languishing in funeral homes across the country, unclaimed, forgotten, ignored. I was recently honored to participate in an interment at the Veterans Memorial Cemetery in Marana. The ceremony was facilitated by a group called the Missing in America Project. And joining us to share more about this great organization is Sean Fund. Sean, welcome to the Buckmaster Show.
Thank you, Ben, for having this opportunity to speak about Missing in America Project.
How did you get involved in Missing in America?
Back in about 2006, I just happened to be stopping, of all places, at a Twin Donut coffee shop on Ina Road here in town. And I saw three or four veterans on their motorcycles, and they had patches on their back and stuff. And I got off, and I shook hands with all of them and said, thank you for your service. One of the veterans followed me into the donut shop and said, hey, we're forming this new organization called Missing in America Project, and would you be interested in becoming a part? And after learning something about the organization, I was instantly hooked.
Now, so far, based on, I found it on the internet, Sean, so it had to be true, but from the Missing in America Project website, 31,797 cremains have been found. 6,761 of those have been identified as veterans, and 6,550 of those veterans were interned. So 6,550 out of 6,761, that's a pretty darn good record.
Yes, I can say with a lot of pride, if I can for a minute, that Arizona has been leading the charge with regard to this, our mission. If you think when I started back in 2006, we first used to go down to Sierra Vista, Arizona Veterans Memorial Cemetery in Sierra Vista when we first started, because there was no Marana Cemetery. And if you average out that we did at least 20 interments per mission, we have a mission twice a year, usually in April and October. This coming October 3rd will be our next mission. But if you average that, that's 40 times how many years I've been doing this, and that's not even taking into consideration the northern part of the state who does the same thing we do down here at sometimes an even greater scale. So Arizona has been really, and my credit goes to Clyde Taylor, we call him Tex. He's the former state coordinator for Missing in America Project, really grabbed the bull by the horns and has directed us in a positive way ever since we started.
Sean, it's hard for me to comprehend how these veterans got here in the first place. Are they just, they don't have family? They're estranged from their family? Were they potentially homeless? I mean, how does someone who, anyone to begin with, but in particular, how does someone who served our country honorably end up forgotten on a shelf somewhere? That just boggles my mind.
Well, to answer all of your questions there, it'll be like this. So first we work very closely with the public fiduciary, veteran organizations, mortuaries and cemeteries around town. What happens, as an example, is someone passes on the street. They go to the public fiduciary's care, and the public fiduciary, we have an agreement. They send us the information on that individual, and if we can verify that they're a veteran, thanks to Ethan Orr a few years back, we changed the law. They become our surrogate parent. The legislature represents us and recognizes us to take care of that individual once he's identified or she's identified. So then they come into our care. But there, I've had situations where people have been driving around with their friend in the trunk of their car.
Oh my gosh.
And not known what to do with them, and then find out about me or someone else in MIEP, and then we take charge of that individual. There have been estrangements. I just recently had one where a young lady contacted me from California. Her father and mother divorced when she was 2 years old, and she just recently found out that her father had passed. We buried her father in the Arizona Veterans Memorial Cemetery here in Marana last year. I made her aware of that. I gave her all the information I could regarding his veteran status, and I promised to give her a flag because the conversation we had was very touching. She told me that she has a two-year-old son herself, and she wanted to make sure that her father would be remembered by his grandson for his service to our nation. And I thought that was a great thing to be able to give to them and to participate in. I was really touched by that.
I tell you, Sean, my opinion, if they served honorably, I don't care if it was for a year or 33 years, they've earned a dignified burial with the full honors. And that's one thing I was so impressed with in this most recent interment that you invited me to participate in. I don't know how many people were there. They're probably 50, 75 maybe. And, these are people, and some of them drove down from Phoenix. Yes. They've never met these people. There's no connection whatsoever, right. But they're giving of their time and themselves to make sure that these veterans get their last honors. And, then the gun salute, the whole, the flags, the whole deal. It's a pretty impressive event.
The one banner we have usually on our dais where we lay the remains on the table says never forgotten. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of one of the drums that we beat in our organization. We become their surrogate family. We're there for them. So if someone is estranged, at the very least, they have people there who care about them, who recognize their service, and are willing to stand and participate to acknowledge them for their service to our nation.
How powerful is Missing in America Project's research arm, if you will? If someone's hearing this program and said, I know I've got a family member who served, I know they've passed, or I suspect they've passed, I have no idea where they ended up, can they just contact the organization through the website and say, hey, can you look this person up, or keep an eye out for them maybe?
Yes, they can go to the website. It's www.miap.us. There's a scroll bar. You can scroll down to Arizona. You'll see my name and other individuals in our organization. You can contact us. We're willing to help anyone as far as identification and location, of their loved one. If they served our nation with honor, at the very least, they should be given the full honors that they deserve. And I can't emphasize that enough, especially Memorial Day weekend just around the corner here.
Right. That's why I wanted to have you on, because I know one of the things that I admonished some of the people in attendance there was to in the program, you had the names of the folks you were burying, and keep that program, put it on your refrigerator, and just, I'll never get it right, Sean, but something to the effect of, as long as you die twice, once when the soul leaves the body, and number two, when people stop, saying your name. So for me, that's a personal thing I do on Memorial Day, is I just go on the internet and I find a dozen fallen soldiers or sailors or airmen or whatever, and I kind of get to know them. And I sort of got that feel as well with that internment out there. Sean, we come back, I want to talk more about how other folks can get involved and support you. Again, folks, the website is miap.us. All right. Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Don't forget, if you have a question or comment for Sean, you can give us a call, 790-2040.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies.
on the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller-Garcia sitting in for the occasioning Bill. Hey, listen, as you might have noticed, the temperatures are starting to heat up a little bit. It's the perfect time to plan your summer visit to Silver City, New Mexico. Silver City sits at 6,000 feet elevation. It's just naturally cooler, and you're right in the heart of the beautiful 3-million-acre Gila National Forest. Lots of outdoor adventures, but also Silver City is a small town with big culture, easy to find things to do for the whole family. Start your journey by checking out southwestnewmexico.org. Easy 3-hour drive from Tucson, southwestnewmexico.org. We're back with Sean Fund, who is the local. What is your title? You're the local honcho? Is that something more sophisticated than that?
My title is the Arizona Assistant State Coordinator for Missing in America Project.
That's a lot better than honcho.
Yeah.
Sean, as you heard, with the Missing in America Project, and Sean, I read the numbers, you know, 31,797 remains identified. Do you have any idea where that puts us? Are we just scratching the surface? Or
Yes. We have MIAP as a presence in every state. Some states' membership is a little low. We're constantly looking for volunteers to step in from all over the country because we're dragging a fingernail across the chalkboard of what's beneath it. As an example, I don't know how many people are aware, but it's unlawful to bury someone who's had military service in a what we used to call a potter's grave. Hmm. And 2 years back, as an example, in California, came to our attention that there was a World War One, World War Two nurse. Her first name was Olive. I can't recall her last name, but to make a very long story short, what happened was we identified her as being buried in a potter's grave. We had to do some arm twisting of the board of supervisors over there because the answer I got was, well, that's going to be expensive. Who's going to pay for that being disinterred and reinterment? And I said, well, who buried her in the wrong place to begin with? They right. didn't like that answer.
Yeah.
But it took about a year and a half, and we finally had it done. Olive was buried next to her second husband, who served in World War II. She was a highly decorated nurse in from the United States, and also recognized by France for her service.
Wow.
But this is a mere example of when people don't do research, try not to find out somebody's background. This is what happens to a lot of our veterans. They get put in a potter's field, or unfortunately, they're sitting in some mortuary shelf. Mm-hmm. Because when a business changes hands, if I sold you my mortuary, it's everything, nuts and bolts. So if I have 10 people in the closet that were never claimed, they're still there. We've had people, Ben, that have been as old as the... we've had a Buffalo soldier that we've reinterned. We've had the oldest people that I'm aware of are two people from the Spanish-American War that we interned. And they all came from funeral parlors.
And they were just sitting there the whole time.
And the condition in which they were left in is what would make your stomach turn. It was like, I've seen crushed coffee cans. I've seen things that look like you get Chinese food in. And it's despicable for someone who served our nation with honor.
So again, folks, the website is miap.us. That's the Missing in America Project. Sean, when you talk about volunteers, you mentioned the Patriot Riders that usually escort these cremains up to the cemetery. But what else? What other roles are there? I assume fundraising, research. Can I help from my desk at home?
A lot of people. If you have a background, we have two individuals who are very active with. Ancestry.com. And that's one way we do backgrounds. We have individuals in our organization who are hooked into the Veterans Administration and who help us there with identifications of individuals. There's always a need for volunteers. I mean, as you saw for yourself at our last mission, we have people, we ask them to stand the flag line, to pass out water, to pass out pamphlets, to do research. If you have a speciality, let's say it's doing investigations and you want to help try and identify some of these people, we have people who are available to help train you, and we will welcome you with open arms. The more, the merrier.
All right. So, and frankly, also, you've got, when's your next internment coming up?
October 3rd.
Okay, so another frankly simple thing to do, but I think very powerful, is, you know, find out more, go to the website, get the date and time, and just drive up there with your family and just be there. You know, be that, add to that extended family of this fallen veteran. And you know what? Bring your kids. Make sure that they know and recognize the sacrifice that these folks, you know, make on our behalf.
And it's not just the public. And we've had, almost every day I'll see a veteran and I'll ask him, are you from the Tucson area? And they acknowledge it. And I explain what our organization does. And they're overwhelmed, because a lot of them still, even with all the work we've done, a lot of them still have no idea that this is being done in the background. And we need new blood, like any new organization. It's going to take place, hopefully continue after I'm gone. And the baton has to be handed off.
And, of course, folks can make donations.
Correct. They can go on the website and make direct donations to our organization.
Sean, you and I also participate in a what I consider a very powerful event every year, the 9/11 Memorial Tower Challenge. And I got to say, Sean, I think you're always – well, now, in fairness, I think you were the next-to-last finisher last year, because we had a guy with two – really bad knees and
yes.
200 pounds overweight.
Yes.
God bless him, he did it. But you actually do that climb for four individuals that
yes.
that were yeah. friends or comrades or were killed on 9/11?
Yeah, my childhood friend, Sergeant John Coughlin, he was in ESU in New York City. They were the first responding unit to Building 1. And him and his members of his unit, with the exception of one, were on the 21st floor. He sent the one fellow back, the one detective back. When he got to the truck, the building fell.
Mm.
And There's Johnny Coughlin was his name. John Cortazzo was from my hometown in New Jersey, Creskill, New Jersey, who served on the Port Authority. He died of effects from 9/11. I can't remember Jeannie's last name. Her brother, of all things, was a fireman. And when I tell people how he passed, I take everybody's breath away. He actually was killed by a jumper.
Oh, my gosh.
He actually, that's wow. How he passed on Ground Zero. He got hit by a jumper the first day. Those people, I can remember everybody seeing those movies. Nobody wants to recall that, and I don't mm-hmm. blame you, but that's how he passed. And then the other gentleman was Detective NESU, separate unit. He was a cousin of one of the young ladies I went to high school with. And I carry those pictures with me during, as you've seen in the past, on each time I do the Tower Challenge.
Well, September 11th is not that far away from Memorial Day, but I wanted to bring it up because they're, you know, we do the climb to memorialize those first responders and, of course, the military people that were killed at the Pentagon as well. And it's just a very powerful event. And registration is open for that now if you'd like to climb. The challenge is to climb 2,071 steps, which is the equivalent of the 110 stories in the World Trade Center towers. I can't do it. But, you know, you do as much as you can. If you can do 10 steps, come on down and do 10 steps. And, of course, 100% of the proceeds benefit military and first responder charities. I just, to me, and I explained this before, Sean, to me, and I never served. I've got one family member who did. I've got lots of friends who did. But for me, Memorial Day is like going to the dentist. It's not fun. It can be painful. But it's the right thing to do. You have to do it. And so yes. I don't want to say it's my least favorite holiday, but it's certainly an interesting time for me. What advice would you share for folks out there that think it's all about mattress sales and barbecues?
If you have the opportunity, I would encourage you to either go to the VA or call the VA and see if you can volunteer some of your time to help the men and women who have served our nation with honor. Or at the very least, go to, there are a lot of flag planting mm-hmm. ceremonies around town where you can call up and participate in putting out flags. I'll be doing that myself. And that's one way to pay tribute to all these fallen men and women.
And, of course, they can, I mean, for Gold Star families, Memorial Day is every day.
Yes.
And but this is something else, and that's why I like Missing in America Project, because this is something people can do all year long. And, yes. You know, my friends tease me because they call me a creaster. You only see me in church at Christmas and Easter. And, you know, if you can only honor these folks on Memorial Day, good on you. That's okay, too.
Yes.
But get engaged in something like the Missing America Project, and you can honor these folks all year long. How many interments do you do on average a year?
I would say on average we do here in southern Arizona at least 40.
40?
Yeah.
Wow.
20 for each mission.
Okay.
We run this mission in October. I've already been told we're going to have a large contingent. I think we're already up to the 15 mark. So,
can you tell us the time now? So it's October 3rd, you said?
Yes, it's October 3rd. The ceremony at the cemetery will start at 10 o'clock. If you're going to go to the Arizona Mortuary and Cemetery, where we start our procession, kickstands on the motorcycles and stuff will be up at 8:45.
Outstanding.
But on public media, I'll post a flyer so everybody has a chance to be aware.
Ladies and gentlemen, please look it up. It's the Missing in America Project, MIAP.us. And again, just this Memorial Day, please sacrifice a minute to remember someone out there who sacrificed the rest of their life to keep us free. Sean, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. And please take a moment to reflect for these people, for the sacrifices they have made on behalf of all of us. And especially these times when they're so turbulent, mm-hmm. we need to recognize those who have sacrificed for us and for our rights.